Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hello and welcome to 2019. We're super excited to keep providing you with the Money Tree Investing Podcast to help you invest in your life. But before we do have some awesome back episodes that we would love to share with you. So please enjoy this encore presentation. Now we're going to introduce our guest today on this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast, and it is Deacon Hayes from The Well-Kept Wallet. So glad to have you here today, Deacon.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a little bit about retirement. This is a very popular subject. We're going to talk about early retirement and financial independence and how you can get there kind of from a place of debt. Right? Because this is kind of your story, right, Deacon? You were in debt, you and your wife were in debt, you're raising this family, and now you're working toward financial independence.
Correct. Yeah.
Why don't you talk about some of the things that you did and that other people can do as well to kind of help get rid of that debt and then move forward?
Sure. So when my wife and I got married, we decided the first thing we wanted to do was combine our finances. And that's when we realized, hey, once we put our credit cards and student loans and car loan and all that stuff together, we had 52 grand in debt. So that was the first step was, okay, let's combine them. Let's take a snapshot of where we're at. So we created our first budget. And then we figured, oh my gosh, that's a lot of debt to be starting out life with. So let's figure out a way to pay it off fast, right? Let's not let it hang around for 30 years. You know, like we want to get rid of it fast. So we put together this game plan that basically said we're going to use the debt snowball, was where we paid our debts off smallest to largest. It doesn't necessarily make the most mathematical sense, but it makes the most psychological sense because we got small wins very quickly, right? Paid off a credit card and took that money, put it into another debt, paid off that debt, then put that in and rolled that into another debt. And when you know, we paid off all $52,000 in 18 months. So that was really awesome for us because, you know, my wife was a school teacher. I was selling wood floors. We're just average people that did this, but I thought, hey, this would be cool to help other people do that and to figure out what the next step is. And so that next step was early retirement.
You talk about making a plan. How important is putting together a plan, whether you're working on paying down debt or whether you're hoping to invest in the future or invest in something? How important is that plan?
Yeah. Oh, it's super important. And the thing that we use first is establish what your why is, right? Why do you want to retire early? Why do you want to be financially independent? Because that's going to really dictate what your plan involves, right? If you want to travel, then you need to have travel expenses in there. If you want to have a second home, you got to have a second home in there. So really, what is that why of why you want to retire early? Is it you want to spend more time with family? Is it that you want to have the freedom to not have to ask for time off to go on vacation? Is it that you want to travel the world? Whatever those things are, let those things dictate what your plan is, right? And so you want to create a personalized plan for you. So what works for my wife and I might not work for you, but there are multiple different paths. And the three different paths that I talk about are real estate, stock market, and entrepreneurship. Those are the three main ways that people retire early and achieve financial independence. So yeah, creating a plan that's personalized for you on the path that makes the most sense for you is going to give you the best shot at retiring early.
Right. And now you chose the entrepreneurship path. That's correct?
Correct.
So now you do this by, you know, you have an online business and have you got to the point where you've quit your real job or it's like the online business enough to sustain you in your lifestyle yet? Or are you still working toward that?
Yeah. So technically we would be considered financially independent and I work for myself full time or well, part time because I don't have any other jobs. But yeah, what I did is I created three different streams of income or three different businesses that provide revenue and all of them far exceed our monthly expenses. The challenge with entrepreneurship though is it's a little bit more volatile than real estate and the stock market because, you know, you can say, you know, the stock market historically has done X, right? Over the past 100, 150 years, whatever. You can say the real estate market, the same thing. Entrepreneurship doesn't have as long of a proven track record because whatever your business model is, things change, competition, all that type of stuff. So for us, yeah, we're in that place where we make six figures, somewhat passive, I guess you would say. I have people that I check in with and things like that, but I don't spend a lot of time working like in a traditional sense.
Yeah, I like that. And in a lot of ways, for a long time, you know, I mean, I did my freelancing business and even though I work for as a W-2 employee for a remote company now, it's not really true financial independence, but it is like I do get to set my own hours. I do get to travel as much as I want still. It doesn't stop me from doing what I want to do with my son. It doesn't stop me from going and having a spa day on a Thursday. So I really like this idea of it being more like lifestyle design than necessarily some sort of traditional form of retirement. Is that kind of what you see too? Is it a way more of designing your lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point because I don't think I'll ever retire per se, right? I'll just be able to work less, work when I want to and do what I want. So similar to like you said, I mean, I don't necessarily take a spa day, but I mean, if I wanted to take a day off and I'm going to do this urban assault class where they teach you how to like fire guns inside, you know, urban environments or whatever, I can go do that, you know? And so there's things that I think retirement for me is more about the financial independence side, right? That, you know, that FIRE acronym, which is financial independence, retire early. I'm much more on the financial independence side, less on the retire early side, because we all have to do something, right? We have to keep ourselves productive, help others, add value. And it's very hard to do if you're just sipping Mai Tais on the beach.
Right, for sure. Yeah, I'm like you. I can't imagine ever like just doing nothing all day, right? So tell me a little bit about taking this entrepreneurship path and, you know, how you got started and what kinds of plans, what kinds of steps you took to get this entrepreneurship path going so that you could start designing that lifestyle you wanted for financial independence.
Well, I started in the wrong space, which was an eBay store. I thought, hey, you know what? Selling stuff online sounds great. And I didn't realize how much shipping and how much packaging and labeling and all that stuff that was involved. Some people make it work, but I sold $40,000 in product. And I thought I basically made nothing, you know, after I, you know, I bought materials and laptop and desk and all that stuff. And I'm like, this isn't for me. So the online business really appealed to me because you didn't have to ship anything, right? And you have a lot bigger audience. So, you know, I was selling like little electronics pieces, right? And it's whoever wanted that. And so with my site, Well Kept Wallet, we help people save money, make money, and pay off debt. And so I figured out ways to partner up with different brands that help people do one of those three things. So it's a win-win-win, right? So the audience gets something to help them, you know, achieve their goal. The brand, they get a new customer, and then we make something off of that transaction. So really through the affiliate marketing, that's where we make most of our money now. And it just started off slow. It was, hey, let's identify 10 affiliates that we'd want to partner with and figure out strategically how we could get their message out there. You know, whether it was ranking that information in Google or getting it shareable on Facebook or, you know, creating beautiful pins that people are going to be attracted to, you know, just figuring out those components so that we could get the most traffic to those articles and get them to convert into revenue.
Awesome. Great point. So now you went ahead and went the entrepreneurship route. Do you have any ideas of how somebody could maybe go one of the other two paths that you talked about? You know, it's since entrepreneurship isn't something that's for everybody, you know, have you thought about trying some of these other paths as well to further diversify your income? How would you go about testing out the waters on these other paths?
Sure. So I definitely am about diversification and I have my foot in all three. The easiest one is the stock market, right? And that's where most people are. And investing in index funds is kind of the safe way to do it, I'd say these days, or I'm not a licensed financial professional, so I'll say that. But the idea is an index fund, you can invest in multiple companies in one investment vehicle, right? And you can find them that have 8 to 10% annualized returns over a long period of time. And that's kind of the set it and forget it route. That's where people will say, okay, let's just say you stacked up $1 million at a 4% withdrawal rate, which is what they usually use as a safe withdrawal rate, would be $40,000 a year in income, right? So the stock market's kind of the easier way of just saying, okay, I just got to stock up a bunch of money. I got to let it grow. And then I can withdraw this much out. Then there's the real estate route, which I tried the physical owning real estate. I'm not a big fan of being a landlord myself. So I am invested in crowdfunded real estate. It's much more hands-off. Literally, it's like investing in the stock market, but you just invest in what's called an E-REIT, which is an electronic real estate investment trust. And you basically just give someone your money and you get a annualized return based off of whatever the actual real estate properties you invest in. So it could be single family residences, it could be apartment complexes, whatever it is. So And, you know, and then there's the traditional way, which I might do in the future, where, you know, you just come up with 20, 25% down, buy a rental property, find a renter, fix it up, rent it out, you know, and collect the paychecks. So yeah, I'm a big fan of diversification. And yeah, to your point, we are, we're going after all three.
See, that's great. Being able to diversify those income streams really helps so that if something kind of lags a little or you experience some sort of market event, you've got something to fall back on. And many of our listeners know I love indexing. I'm a confirmed index investor and I love that. And I also love REITs. And you can also check out some of our past episodes about investing in real estate, as well as some of our past episodes on index investing. So we invite you to go check those out. But kind of going forward with Deacon now, so how do you decide which areas get the most emphasis? So you're talking about having your fingers in all three of these paths and all three of these pies. So how do you decide which ones kind of, I guess, make up your financial independence portfolio? So how do you divide those out? What's your asset allocation in your financial independence portfolio?
Yeah, well, so mine is going to differ from, you know, the listeners per se, but really it's going to be based off of risk and it's going to be based off of kind of your skill set. So if you want something that's a little bit less risky, a little bit more proven, a little bit more hands off, you know, where it's kind of set and forget it, the stock market is usually the best route to go, right? That's where the average person, you could be a janitor, a teacher, whatever, and you could become financially independent in that route and not really have to have a lot of focus on, you know, research and figuring out those details. If you're more of a hands-on person, like you like to fix things and you like to build things, then, you know, real estate could be a good option for you because you can save a lot of money and you can get your hands dirty and do the things that you enjoy doing and make money in the process. And then if you are more of a risk taker, if you're more innovative, if you are always thinking of ideas, you know, and you're like, ah, I could make money if I did this, you know, then the entrepreneurship route might be for you. But there is some wisdom in saying, you know, having your foot in all three, but you're going to lean towards the path that you have the most draw to. Like we kind of talked about, if you're hands-on, if you want to set it and forget it, or if you want to kind of create. So those would be kind of the metrics I would use to determine which the primary path would be. And then when you have extra income, you can say, okay, well, if I'm an entrepreneur, then I'm going to put X amount into the stock market as well, or I'm going to, you know, put X amount into crowdfunded real estate as well, just to kind of have that diversification.
Yeah, that really makes a lot of sense. As we're getting close to the end of our interview here, could you please tell us a little bit about your book that was recently published and where others can find you online?
Yeah. So the book is called You Can Retire Early, Achieve Financial Independence When You Want It. And so the idea was to just give people a real practical step-by-step way to say, this is how you can become financially independent. And we actually have a giveaway right now. So if they want to go to wellkeptwallet.com/retire, they can find out more about the book as well as get my $97 course for free called Debt Free in 18 Months. So it was a course that I designed to help people achieve goals in a short period of time. And they can find that at wellkeptwallet.com/retire.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Deacon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and now we'll go ahead and move into the panel portion. But first, a quick word from Joe and our sponsor.
Thanks, Miranda. Great interview with Deacon as usual. I love Deacon Hayes. Hey, before we get to our second half of the Money Tree podcast, we have to thank Buzz Media for their support. If you've ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all the online chatter of the millions of investors on social media, your wait's over, because the same artificial intelligence techniques that are used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, that's now at your fingertips, and you can make their edge your edge. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund and trades under ticker symbol BUZ. It gives investors a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. What does that mean? Well, it means no surveys, no guessing. Here's how it works instead. First, Buzz targets the most mentioned large cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. And as the conversation becomes more active, the reliability of the Buzz gets greater. Each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks they talk about most positively, those get included in the index. And each month, the Buzz is tracked again to capture the latest big data-driven insights. And then the 75 companies the most bullish scores, those are selected again, positioning Buzz to capture the highest return potential. So invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/ /BUZZ. And just a disclaimer, I use the Buzz Index in my portfolio. Doesn't make it right for you. Got to let you know that. You should do your own homework. Miranda?
And while you're investing in things, don't forget to invest in your life and in your health. Life insurance is one of the best ways to show your loved ones that you care and to make sure they're taken care of after you are gone. And Health IQ uses science and data to help secure low rates on life insurance for health-conscious people. So if you are living a healthy lifestyle, you have the chance of qualifying for up to 33% off your life insurance. Health IQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared to people who are inactive. On top of that, Health IQ will look at your family history and reduce your chances of being penalized for that adverse family history if you are otherwise healthy. On top of that, Health IQ recognizes a low resting heart rate is a sign of health. Most carriers penalize people if their heart rate is too low, but we help you recognize that that's a sign of your excellent health and fitness. On top of that, Health IQ works with carriers to ensure that strength trainers have a BMI buffer to account for their muscles. A lot of this goes into the Health IQ, whether you have a plant-based diet, if you are willing to take a quiz and score elite, you can go ahead and even receive lower insurance rates if you have a membership to a qualifying association or gym for more than 1 year. See if you qualify for a 33% discount on your life insurance by heading to healthiq.com/moneytree. And now we're going to go ahead and move into the roundtable portion of our show. We're missing Linda today, unfortunately. She's feeling under the weather. So we hope you feel better, Linda. We hope that you will be joining us again soon. But we do have Doug Goldstein. How are you doing today, Doug?
I'm doing fantastic, Miranda. It is a great day here in Israel.
Awesome. And what about you, Joe? How are things going down in the sunny metropolis of Texarkana?
It might be sunny, but as you know, Miranda, I work in my mom's basement, so no sun for me, but wonderful now that I'm here with you and Dougie Fresh.
Awesome. So let's get started here. So we talked to Deacon Hayes about entrepreneurship and starting businesses. So he mentioned three paths to business income. What path or paths have you taken? So let's go ahead and start with you, Doug. What paths to entrepreneurship have you taken?
Actually, I've been sort of in the entrepreneurial world since I was a kid. When I was 15, I started my first company. It was called Entertainment Enterprises of New York. It was a very official sounding name. And I used to take friends and who were like clowns and bartenders and mimes, and I would try to place them at parties, and I took a cut. So right from the outset, I knew that I was not the kind of guy who would be sitting in a cubicle my whole life, but rather I would be starting businesses. And since then, that really has been the path that I followed the past 20 years, I've been running my own company here. So I don't know what point you switch from being an entrepreneur to being an old business owner, but I guess I probably have passed that mark at some point.
Yeah. So, I mean, what were some of the challenges that you faced? I mean, this is really interesting in today's internet kind of world. You know, Deacon talked about starting a website and kind of growing his wealth that way. But in this sort of, you know, we think about that a lot in our internet world. What were some of the things that you had to face doing things so analog?
Is that your way of asking Doug just how old he is?
That's right.
Tell us a story.
I remember when dinosaurs roamed the earth and we didn't have internet. Listen, in those days, I also didn't think I fully understood the power of delegating, whereas now I totally understand the power of delegating, especially thanks to reading Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek. And now I really feel that I do a good job. I have a big staff who does a great job, and not only people in the office, but people all around the world. So the path, I think, to real success is looking at yourself as the guy who steers the ship and then finding people who can do everything that needs to be done probably better than you can and giving them the opportunity to shine.
That's a really good point that we don't often think about the teams that are needed to make this, to make a business work. And being able to delegate is a big thing, whether you hire a whole staff like Doug or whether, like me, you just kind of contract with some podcast producers or get a virtual assistant. So what about you, Joe? What was your path to entrepreneurship?
Well, it's funny. I use all three paths to financial independence, but entrepreneurship clearly has been the one for me. I've already sold two different businesses during my life. And, you know, I think you always set up businesses to make yourself obsolete. I love this idea, though, of thinking about financial independence from the start, because I feel like a lot of business owners, a lot of people buying stock, a lot of people buying real estate, don't think about the end game, right? When you start off, if you're worried about financial independence, the question is, even if you're a buy and hold investor, how am I going to sell this? What is my exit strategy? And I think if you've got a long runway to plan that stuff, you're going to have a far better exit strategy than most people, which is you're in a panic. It's the last minute. You got to kind of give stuff away because you didn't think about it earlier.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point as well. You want to make sure that you plan for these things. You have to think ahead. When I started freelancing, I had no plan. I had no idea what I was doing. I just thought I'd make a couple bucks here and there to help pay for rent while my then husband was in school. And then all of a sudden I turned around and I had a business, and I hadn't accounted for taxes. And I was sitting here going, what am I supposed to do with myself now? And kind of make a plan. But kind of like Doug, I realized early on that I was not going to be sitting and doing a traditional 9-to-5. I had a job as a cashier at a local craft store. That was my first job as a teenager. And after probably about, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, I thought it was not for me. And I quit and started teaching piano lessons. I quickly learned that that wasn't for me either, but teaching isn't my thing. But it did kind of whet my appetite for like non-traditional ways of earning money.
Can I just put together what you two said? I just want to understand it, because Joe is talking about an exit strategy. And it sounds to me, Joe, almost that you're defining being an entrepreneur as someone who builds a business that can be sold. And Miranda answered right away that she's a freelancer. That's not an exit strategy kind of job. That's just a control your own life and hours kind of job.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're kind of different paths, right? So Joe is building a business, right? He's building a business that he can sell and move on from. And I'm just building something that allows me to live the lifestyle I want. So there are two different ways of at least, you know, getting that sort of lifestyle freedom that you want.
Well, these two, you know, the last two businesses I actually did that with, this business is a little different because it's definitely based on my expertise with what I did before this and my personality. So, you know, when you look at stuff for Stacking Benjamins, it has my flipping face all over it, which isn't good if you're trying to do two things. If you're trying to scale, number one, which is good for businesses. And number two, if you're trying to sell, because businesses built on your personality aren't the same. So this one, Doug, actually, I'm in this last one more for a different reason, which is closer to Miranda's, so that I can just at this point in my life do what I want to do when I do it and make money doing what I love. Mm-hmm.
And seeing your face all over the place, which we all love too, Joe.
Yeah, that's great. I have a face for radio, so that's the worst part of that whole thing.
Well, it's a good thing you have podcasts.
That's right. That's right. Audio only, baby, for the win.
So we've talked a little bit about taking these paths to income. You know, Deacon talks about making sacrifices, paying down debt, working toward his financial freedom. Were you ever in a position where you had to sacrifice something to move forward? And we'll start with you this time, Joe.
You know, so many times have I had to sacrifice things to get ahead. Like there's things that we really want, and we think that we want them now, but to make it easy to get where we want to go, we have to sacrifice. I'll tell you kind of an analogy. Well, not even an analogy, just something that happened early in my career. I was working as an early financial advisor. I was making decent money, and I was deciding if I wanted to hire more help to work with me or not. And a mentor of mine used a poker analogy. He said, you're at this level you're at. It's a pretty decent level, and you have a decision to make. Do you want to play for these chips, was his analogy, or do you want to push the chips back into the table and say, I'm playing for a bigger stack of chips? And I remember that doesn't make either one right or wrong. I just decided at that time in my life that I wanted to play for a bigger stack of chips. And by pushing your chips further into the table, you knew that I knew that I was going to give up income to hire people, income that was going in my pocket to hire people, so that I could scale my business to a bigger level than it was then.
So what about you, Doug? What have you had to sacrifice in order to make this work?
Well, I'm going to go back like Joe did to a long time ago in my career. When I started on Wall Street, I was in one of these what we called a wirehouse, a major, major brokerage firm. And, you know, I was a rookie young guy. And one of the senior guys in the office, who was pretty old, I mean, at least at that time he seemed old, he was, you know, 50 or something. He called me into his office and we got along pretty well. And he said, Doug, he must have been like 60. He said, Doug, I'm thinking of retiring. So let's you and me partner up and I'll retire in a couple of years and you'll take over the book. And I said, wow, that's great. Because, you know, that would obviously be the fast road to success. I said, no problem. And because I was pretty technologically savvy at the time too, I said, I just want you to know that my wife and I are planning to be moving to Israel in about a year or so because we want to raise our family there. And but don't worry, I'll be able to do it from there. And he looks at me and he goes, Doug, forget it. And that was it. That was the sacrifice. I gave up this opportunity to be a partner with this guy because I had a lifestyle goal to live in Israel. And it turned out to be the best decision that I ever made. But man, was that an expensive decision. Big sacrifice. How about you, Miranda?
kind of like Deacon, there's a point in my life where I had debt and was kind of struggling with debt. And I kind of think of as a sacrifice a little bit is since I started out writing, instead of writing things I wanted to write, you know, all writers start out thinking they're going to write these wonderful think pieces, these high-minded, fabulous things, and then get paid for them. And instead of doing that, in order to like make ends meet, I had to write about bamboo flooring and Venetian blinds for catalog descriptions.
So the thought of that makes me shudder.
Right. But I did. I mean, and part of it too was because I so did not want to get a real job. Sometimes, I mean, there were times where I would be working 50, 60 hours a week. And that's one thing that a lot of people don't think about when they want to start their own business or set up these different income streams, whether it's real estate or, you know, online or whatever it is you're doing. A lot of the time when you first start, you have to put in a lot of time and a lot of effort. And you find yourself doing more work than you ever would if you had a 9-to-5 job. And it's kind of a sacrifice in that way. In the end, you know, I mean, I worked 50, 60, 70 hours a week sometimes for a couple years. And then in the end, it paid off and I don't have to work nearly that much now. But
I kind of love that though, Miranda. I love it because you're working more than you would 9-to-5. I totally agree with that. But you're doing it because you're so in it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, sometimes I really wasn't into bamboo flooring.
Probably not.
I was not living the dream. But
do you feel this gives you the ability to decide what you're going to earn? Meaning if you decide you're going to work harder, you just earn more, or you just work in yourself into a tizzy?
Well, yeah, I do find that a lot of the time, if I want to, you know, I mean, it's like a couple of weeks ago, you know, somebody came to me with, you know, one-off project and I was like, well, I'd like a little extra money to go on a 3-day weekend for, you know, President's Day. So, okay. You know, rather than having to, you know, I mean, I could pay for this 3-day weekend without having to do extra work, but the thought of just like doing a couple days extra work and then just getting paid and not having to like go into my travel fund or whatever really appealed to me. But yeah, a lot of the time you can just do that. I actually signed up as a Lyft driver to try it out for fun. I mean, it sort of got addicting to be like, oh, hey, if I want to make a couple bucks, I'll just turn on the Lyft driver app and just do a little more driving. So yeah, it is kind of like that. But there are times like when you're building a website and trying to monetize it, that it can get frustrating. And you sometimes do feel like you're working a lot of hours to not see any benefit, and the benefits come way down the road.
I think one of the trade-offs that you're really pointing out, and you're a good example of this, and in fact, just what you said, is that if you want to make a quick buck and you have some skills, like you have a lot of skills, Miranda, you just go out and do something and you're billing by the hour, and then you make the money right away, as opposed to, like you said, well, you set up the website, which is trying to set up an online business and get recurring revenue and all of these things, which a lot of people in the podcastosphere really push. And they say, all you have to do is just put up a website and sell stuff. And, you know, it's, you earn money while you sleep. A, it doesn't always happen. And B, it doesn't always happen right away. So you seem to have figured out that there's two ways of doing it. Either I need money right now and I can go drive, or I can write an article, or I can build a business, but that could be a longer road to success and it may not succeed.
Right. And you can do a little bit of both, right? I mean, one of the things that I've actually told somebody that I'm coaching a little bit is I was like, hey, you know, you work on this business on the side, build it up. It's going to take you at least a year. I mean, you know, I try not to like give people false hope, like, hey, in 1 month, you're going to be making
four figures from your website. Yeah. But, you know, I'm like, build it up, do what you need to do, spend an hour or two on it each day and just kind of really put the time in and work on it and build it up. But at the same time, you can do this other stuff. You know, I mean, I used to just, I would take on a project and I have my own websites and we have this podcast, Money Tree Podcast, which happens to be profitable. But it took about a year and a half for the Money Tree Podcast to become profitable. You know, you have to realize that. And you don't have to just do one thing. As Deacon pointed out, you know, he's tried, you know, he's cultivating multiple revenue streams and trying different ideas. Joe talked about how he's tried all of these things too. And these multiple revenue streams, it's a huge, huge thing to be working on more than one thing at once.
Do you think he was referring, when he spoke about the stock market, do you think he was referring to that as a revenue stream for younger people like us? Or that was just a place to put aside the money that you actually make and put in there for the long term?
I think it was the second one.
I think so, yeah. Knowing Deacon, it was definitely the second one. Although you can build up, yeah. You know, while you're doing that, you can build up your dividend portfolio and eventually, you know, live off of the revenue stream from that. But I think he's talking long-term wealth to have something to draw on after you've done these other things for a few years, then you have something to draw on. And I know that Pete Adney, he did something similar where they put a lot of money into the stock market and let that kind of grow while they were working on other schemes for financial independence.
There's something to be said, too, about transferring from one to the other. I like his idea of these three streams, but I don't necessarily like having just one. You know, I really like having all three of these if possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am a big fan of diversifying your revenue streams. For me, it started out as a freelancer. It started out as, okay, I'm just going to write for several different clients so that I don't become too reliant on one client. And then later, as I went through, I was like, that's not enough. I need to do different types of things. And so I was building my dividend portfolio and, you know, I started trying some other business things, you know, writing a book, starting podcasts and looking at kind of different ways of doing things. I don't know that I'll ever become a landlord.
Well, why wouldn't you? But you would buy a REIT, right? Or an
index fund. I have REITs. Yeah, I do have REITs. And that's part of my dividend portfolio is actually REITs. And so I think that, you know, when you take a look at what you can do for revenue streams, and then I have another fun thing that I might try here going forward. So we'll see if my next experiment works.
Do you think that if you own REITs, it's really the same kind of thing as owning real estate and being a landlord, or it's just another kind of stock?
So the thing with REITs, right, is the property's actually there. So, I mean, well, it depends.
So they tell you.
If you're doing a REIT ETF, then no, it's not actually there. A REIT ETF is a really special.
Or a mortgage REIT. Yeah. It's just the mortgage is behind it, not even a property.
Yeah, or the mortgage is behind it if you're doing a mortgage REIT. So it's different than actually owning property, but it makes you feel good about being diversified in terms of assets. And who knows whether that's true or not, right? But you feel good, right? So anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this up. We've been going for a little bit here. So what is happening over in your world, Doug? Tell us what is new.
Well, actually, at GoldsteinOnGelt.com, we have gotten a lot of new people signing up for the podcast. And I think I credit this to the awesome like 1 minute video I made teaching people how to subscribe to podcasts on your iPhone. I put that up at GoldsteinOnGelt.com/subscribe. And I strongly suggest people not only do it for Goldstein on Gelt, but also for the Money Tree Investment Podcast. Just sign up for your favorite podcast. Not only does it make it easy for you to get the podcast, but it also tells Apple that this is a really loved podcast and it helps the podcast to grow. So we certainly appreciate when anyone subscribes.
Yeah, definitely. Make sure you subscribe. What about you, Joe?
We've got poker player Annie Duke, who wrote a great book on making smart decisions when you don't have all the facts. She, of course, knows that intimately. I mean, think about this. She probably, in a couple hours' time, will make the same decision that most of us make when we're buying a three-bedroom house, right? With cards turned over, going, not sure what that card is, but I'm going to go big on this $250,000 pot or whatever it is. So Annie Duke is going to talk about making better decisions on Stacking Benjamins.
Awesome. And over at adulting.tv, just published something on how to invest when you're broke AF. So if you don't have any money and you want to learn how to invest, head on over to adulting.tv and check out that article. There's also a little bit of a Facebook Live in there where I talk about dividends and dividend investing. So all of that's just right there at your fingertips at adulting.tv. And meanwhile, once again, as Doug said, make sure that you subscribe. Head over to moneytreepodcast.com for more information, our archive, and what you can do to ask your questions. So make sure you head on over there, ask us a question. We'll try and answer it in an upcoming listener question episode. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. We're on all of those places, and you can have a nice, fresh, hot, piping episode delivered to your device every Friday morning. So make sure you head over and take care of that. And while you're at it, remember that no one will take care of your money the way you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.